Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African
Perspective. Talking to my people, yeah. Your own, hoping the streets will somehow occupy your mind. You fight the hurt when you're alone. Seems as though reality dropped another life at your feet. Now that you face another day, it leaves you feeling like you'd like to take it home. Your eyes see things and say, no way. Feels like there's an enemy in everyone who loves you.
Ghetto people,
people,
what are you gonna do?
Tell me.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. I've been rolling pretty well with the broadcast, but for some reason, I had a little problem, a little technical problem, but we'll solve that, and we'll get back on the case. Abargani family, and of course today's answer, Abargani means what's the news, and of course today's response is Ujamaa. Some say Ujama, some say Ujamaa, and of course that's cooperative economics. That means we pull our money together, we spend money with each other, we purchase things from one another. That's what it means, collectively. And of course, later on in the program, I'm going to have my guest will be Baba Akima from the Us Lifting Us organization, a organization that I'm with and I promote consistently on this program. So he'll be my guest a little bit later. And of course, this is African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. And this program is unapologetically African. That's right, and we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times that I'm going to give are Eastern times right here on the Time for an Awakening Radio Network. And, of course, our calling number is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832, African Perspectives, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, Revive, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. And then on Thursdays, last night, Ulu, Us Lifting Us, would host Brother DJ, Baba Kimbizi, Baba Akima, Baba Thurman, Sister Nanana, Sister Shea, and many other brothers and sisters, Brother DK from across the waters, Brother Madike. He's from Senegal, but he lives in Scotland, something like that. And, of course, if it's Friday, and it is, at 8 p.m. this evening Eastern Time, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturdays, tomorrow, SST, Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then Saturday afternoon, Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. And then once again on Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it is Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. You know, me and Brother Jeff attended Dr. Umar's presentation here in Atlanta at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. And his Kwanzaa presentation, I know he said in the email, said, I'm tired of these folks. I'm going to give back all the money and do this Kwanzaa farewell tour and move to Africa. Well, of course, he's not going to do that. But what he is going to do is he's going to fight for those brothers and sisters, and particularly for our children. He's going to continue to fight. And he has a hearing coming up with the some accreditation board in Pennsylvania, you know. And so, Brother Umar, and I'm going to try my best to get him on this program, and you'll find out when that's going to be. I'm definitely going to give Brother Umar on the program, and me and him will chop it up. Find out, probably, hopefully after the board, and find out what happens with that. Because just like you said last night, regardless of what's happening, he's going to still fight for our children. He's still going to have his Tuesday chance for parents on Tuesday. He sets aside that time to talk to parents about what's happening with their children. There's no other child psychologist that is doing that, none of them. So, I mean, you know, regardless of what's happening, and believe me, a month or so ago when this information came to light, I did a program on it, and all I asked for is always to have, if you're involved in our struggle for independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people, then you have integrity and you have accountability and transparency, period. Particularly if you're getting money, asking our brothers and sisters to donate money. That goes with that. And of course, he can do that. And so I see Brother Umar standing tall out of this, although I do wish that some of the things that he did, hey, a lot of times you've done something and you learn from that and you continue to move on. So he's an integral part of the struggle for African people's liberation. There's no doubt about that. So, Brother Umar, I look forward to hopefully having you on the program in the very near future. Also, too, I'm excited about this next week. Of course, Monday is January 1st. And even though they say it's a new year, you know, that's kind of ironic to me that a new year would start in January, the coldest month of the year. I think something new should start when things happen in nature that are new, in spring, in March, in April, something to that effect. You know, that's when we should really have a new year. I'm quite sure in the Kemetic calendar, because number one, this is not the year 2017. That's why when you see calendars and you give times, you see a descending number, because they're descending it down to the supposed birth of Christ. And then it descends upward. Then it ascends upward. So when you look at ancient numbers prior to that particular date, and you can see that African culture had a calendar, particularly Kemetic culture had a calendar. This is the year 6,257. This is not 2017 by the Kemetic calendar, because we had charted all of that. We had a calendar that was based on 365 days. But next week, I'm excited to have Brother Bomani, Brother Bomani Atembe. He is with Africa for Africans. He gives tours to Africa. He has helped over 200 of our brothers and sisters go to Africa and look at what's going on in Africa, to talk about repatriating, that means going back home, and talking about investing in Africa. So he'll be my guest on Monday. You'll get a chance to hear some exciting things that he is planning and the trips that he's going to take to various places, and that more than likely Ghana, West Africa, which is a good place to go to. As you know, I'm very favorable of Ghana. I've been there many times, have established some good relationships with the brothers and sisters in Ghana. So that is Monday. But then on Wednesday of next week, the renowned world traveler, Dr. Rinoka Rashidi, will be my guest. We're trying to develop a once-a-month program where he will come on and talk about specific things that he has done and doing, and encouraging brothers and sisters to be part of his online teaching programs where he exposes brothers and sisters to information. So I'm excited about that. So this is when Brother Ralph sent me a piece on Ann Coulter. Ugly, skinny Ann Coulter, if you know about her. And this was really a shock to me. She was or is, I don't know, dating Jimmy J.J. Walker. In fact, Brother Amos's birthday was a few days ago, and he's almost 70, if he's not 70-something, and he looks great. And some brother commented, in fact, it was Muhammad, Brother Muhammad Abdullah, my good friend Brother Muhammad, commented, said, he looked better than J.J., he sure in the hell does. Brother Amos looks great, Kunta Kinte, you know. But she and J.J. were dating, and that's just a pair that's hard for me to even conceive and look at. Because Ann Coulter is ugly to begin with her narrow, bony self. But she wrote a column, and from my understanding, it's not the first time that she's done it. First, I'll go to the Raw story. Then I'll go to Atlanta Black Star. Ann Coulter claims American Africans don't celebrate Kwanzaa and that the FBI invented the holiday. In one of her more unhinged rants, professional conservative banshee Ann Coulter claimed that Kwanzaa is a made-up racist holiday peddled by the FBI to sow divisions amongst American Africans. Coulter's column, which has been republished by the likes of Breitbart, WorldNet Daily, and Ben Shapiro's The Daily Wire, audaciously positioned that an alternative history of the Pan-African holiday and its creator, Dr. Malala Karanga. This isn't her first year writing it either. She wrote a remarkably similar column in 2013, whose main difference is that it makes reference to Duck Dynasty. I don't know how that can happen, but anyway. According to Coulter, Karanga is a black radical FBI stooge, and his group, United Slaves, were rivals to the Black Panthers. Her analysis appeared to stem from declassified documents proving that Karanga and United Slaves were targets of the FBI counterintelligence program, COINTELPRO. And of course, that program never went out of existence, and now a new component, black identity extremism. They label it black identity extremism. The COINTELPRO continues. And just like Dr. Umar said last night, he is one of those individuals that the government has labeled a black identity extremist, as well as anybody who talks about freedom for African people, whether it's in this country or anywhere else. And divisions between the pro-African groups was intentionally sowed by the Bureau. As an extension of these efforts, Coulter's column appeared to infer Karanga went on to create a holiday meant to be celebrated by American Africans around the world to continue to divide a wedge between our people somehow. Now a professor of Africana studies at the California State University at Long Beach, Karanga was imprisoned for kidnapping and torturing women in 1971. And as if you remember, my guest last week, Friday, was Brother Bashir Mchawi out of New York, who was one of the early creators, along with Karanga, of cons and promoters. In fact, when Karanga, as it states here, was in prison for about 4 years for his torture and maiming of sisters, Kwanzaa began to grow. And it wasn't because of him. It was because of brothers and sisters who are in the movement to create a cultural holiday to get our people, to help our people understand who we are culturally, historically. And of course, to put it in the context of the holiday season where a bunch of other folks are celebrating, Christians and Jews, and of course now us and anybody else. Coulter curiously didn't mention this in her column, opting instead to amuse whether Karanga was a willing FBI dupe or just a plain dupe. At the end of her alternative history, she provided Coulter even created Kwanzaa theme songs to the Jingle Bells. Jingle Bells, Daishiki sells. Whitey has to pay. Burning, shooting, oh what fun on this made-up holiday. Only white liberals take Kwanzaa seriously, she wrote at her conclusion. American Africans celebrate Christmas. They don't celebrate Kwanzaa. Yeah. And then, of course, this is the article from the Atlanta Black Star. And I'm only giving this the time because the reality is that our people need to understand the importance of this holiday. The importance of the Kwanzaa holiday is to make sure that we understand who we are culturally. It focuses on the principles that we need to instill in our everyday lives of unity, of self-determination, collective work and responsibility, cooperative economics, our purpose, our creativity, and our faith. These are the things that are vitally important for any people. And, of course, we focus in on that and hoping that we can put those into our everyday lives. That's the whole reason behind Kwanzaa. That's the whole reason. 'Tis the season for giving and cheer as people across the world celebrate the holidays. The day after Christmas marks the first day of Kwanzaa. But it looks like staunch critics of the Pan-African celebration are trying to rain on the parade. In one of her rants this week, conservative commentator and author Ann Coulter penned column, Pagan Kwanzaa has a made-up racist holiday crafted by the FBI to spark divisions amongst African-Americans. And you know, that alone, right there alone, is how idiotic. Kwanzaa was not created or devised as an instrument of division, which is ludicrous, because what is the principles of a Kwanzaa? Unity, self-determination, responsibility. You know, okay. Ann Coulter penned a column pegging the made-up racist holiday crafted by the FBI. She's saying the FBI did this. Coulter peddled her alternative facts about the holiday, which is celebrated from December 26th to January 1st, calling an occasion to celebrate that is celebrated exclusively by white liberals. In fact, you know what? I don't want to see. And I know there have been Brother Claiborne on Monday, and or was it Wednesday? Had him on Wednesday, and I know that there have been Caucasians at the Kwanzaa celebration in Milwaukee at period times. And because he had to have funding to help keep the library open. And apparently he might have invited somebody. And I ain't got no problem with that. But the bottom line is nobody should ever dictate what happens at Kwanzaa but us. And we should make and be very clear that we are going to celebrate our Kwanzaa without any fear of reprisal or anything. We're not going to tailor it to anybody but us. If a Caucasian wants to come in and sit down and observe, that's fine, because we ain't doing nothing sneaky. We are celebrating who we are. We're reconnecting. We're reestablishing who we are as a people and giving honor and respect and reverence to those who came before us. Kwanzaa is a fake holiday invented in 1966 by black radical FBI stooge Ron Coringa, a.k.a. Dr. Malana Coringa, the founder of United Slaves, the violent nationalist rival to the Black Panthers, she wrote. Liberals have become so mesmerized by multicultural gibberish that they have forgotten the real history of Kwanzaa and Coringa's United Slaves. I hate that United Slaves. Coulter left many truths in her sharply worded analysis, however. Malana Coringa was born Ronald McKinley Everett former militant community group has a means of encouraging cultural revolution amongst American Africans, according to his biography.com. The group was instrumental in building independent schools and setting up American African unions, but drummed up a fierce rivalry between the Black Panther Party and the quest for dominance in the community. This aside, the now college professor went on to create Kwanzaa, a holiday honoring the seven core principles of the Unguza Saba, of Umoja, unity, self-determination, Kujichagulia, collective work and responsibility, Ujima, cooperative economics, Ujamaa, purpose, Nia, creativity, Kumba, and Imani, faith. Karinga became embroiled in controversy soon after the holiday founding and was later convicted in the violent assault and false imprisonment of female members in 1971. Following his three-year imprisonment, he went on to earn his two doctorate degrees and currently teaches Africana Studies at Long Beach, California State, Long Beach. Conservatives weren't here for the real rundown of Kwanzaa and Karinga. However, they proceeded to bash him on social media. Neil Bortz, that's a radio talk show host that you can hear in the Atlanta area. I haven't heard him in quite some time and don't want to. Kwanzaa is a fake holiday promoted by black supremacists. Kwanzaa was created by anti-white communists who was convicted of sexually assaulting and torturing women he held prisoner. It's a racist holiday based on black supremacy and communism. Why is it taught in schools and promoted as a normal holiday alongside Christmas and Hanukkah? This is the epitome of idiocy. The inventor of Kwanzaa hated white people and was a racist himself. My only Kwanzaa tradition is reading Ann Coulter's column every year about this fake holiday. Insights are hilarious. I'm going to read another one here. It's not a celebration. No. When I think of Kwanzaa, I think of who created it. And since that was only some 52 years ago, when you remember him as a racist, rapist, abuser, it puts a little taint on the holiday. Let me just say this before I continue. For those of us, we have, for a very long time, have separated Malala Karinga from Kwanzaa. We recognize his efforts, just like what Brother did this past Friday on the program, Brother Basir Mchawi. We give him that prop, but the bottom line is he doesn't own Kwanzaa. In fact, there's a lot of organizations that he has been alienated from because of how he has ASCAC is one, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilizations, and Kwanzaa is the other. When he got paid by the U.S. Postal Service and the first Kwanzaa stamp came out, there was an uproar because he had changed the colors from the red, black, and green, the colors that Marcus Garvey gave us, to whatever the change of, what was it, black, green, and red, whatever it was. So I don't think of Malala Karinga. You can go to the official Kwanzaa website, which is maintained by the US organization and Dr. Malala Karinga. You can do that. But there are many, many others. So no, Kwanzaa now is celebrated globally. And it is my contention that Kwanzaa will be celebrated even more. Now, I did do a presentation last year because last year was the 50th anniversary of Kwanzaa, particularly on the day of Kujichagulia, self-determination, because I made mention that 50 years later, we're no closer to self-determination today at that time and at this moment than we were 50 years ago or now 51 years ago. There are many of us, let me use the correct term. There are some of us who have that in our hearts and in our minds. But there are many of us who can give less than a rat's exactly about anything. And the fact that they don't want anything to interfere with their Christmas. Because you can celebrate, we say all the time, if you are a Christian, you can celebrate Christmas, and the next day you can celebrate Kwanzaa. If you are a Muslim, because the Kwanzaa celebration is not a religious holiday, it is not a commercial holiday, it is a cultural holiday, which, of course, African people need to reconnect culturally. They need, it is an imperative and a must that we should know who we are. While many American Africans are content with the traditions of Kwanzaa, many felt Karinga's history of violence and abuse are something that cannot be swept under the rug. Milana Karinga, the founder of Kwanzaa, tortured women. I'm just reading some of the responses, Brother B. Was responsible for the death of two Black Panthers. We cannot ignore this history. And I think I agree with that, but I would hope that in the future, at this moment and going forward, that when we say and think of Kwanzaa, we don't think about what Milana Karinga did. And we don't think about his imprisonment for 3 years from 71 to 74. And we don't think about we don't think about none of those things. When we hear the word Kwanzaa, we think about how African people can come together. We think about how African people can control their resources and their land and work towards a unified front. That's what we should be thinking of. Considering its origin, Kwanzaa is Hotep as hell, and I never met a Black Panther from this city that celebrates it. However, I learned Kwanzaa can be a beautiful series of days and not as ridiculous as most holidays in this country. It is a lot less capitalistic, too, and that's the good point. Umoja doesn't mean all in agreement. It doesn't mean free of conflict. We can be unified through tension. We can acknowledge the problems with Karinga and celebrate Kwanzaa as Kwanzaa as well. Kwanzaa is about African people globally. In fact, we should discuss the shortcomings. We don't need to discuss the shortcomings of us, organization, or Karinga. That's what I'm saying. We can kick that stuff to the curb and focus on Kwanzaa, period. To join this conversation, brothers, please give me a call right here at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. And you can join the conversation right here on African Perspectives, on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. That's right. I think about, and here's a brother who's naming the sisters. Every Kwanzaa, I think about Deborah Jones and Gail Davis, who Karinga, the creator of the holiday, kidnapped and tortured, beating them with electrical cords and batons, burning them with a soldering iron, and forcing detergent down. Oh, man, I just bumped that in. But once again, what Karinga has done, that's Karinga. I'm saying what we should be about is embracing Kwanzaa as a transformative concept, instilling those principles in our everyday lives. At the end of this program, I'm going to explain how we can instill those principles in our everyday lives and transform our community. And I'll do it again on Monday, which is the last day of Kwanzaa. And of course, if you remember, my guest Monday will be Brother Bomani Tahimbe of Africa for the Africans. We will be talking about repatriation and investment opportunities in Africa, the many people that he has taken to Africa to have them share any experience and to experience the vibrant culture of Africa, of mixed roots, culture, paradise, nightlife, shopping, networking, business investments, opportunities. All those things await you, and you'll learn more about that on Monday. And of course, on Wednesday, next week Wednesday, Dr. Renoka Rashidi will be my guest, and we're talking about having a program here on African Perspectives with Dr. Rashidi at least once a month so he can talk to the brothers and sisters across the lands. So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will have my guest, Brother Baba Akima, from the Us Lifting Us organization, because the day is Ujamaa. And, of course, that's what Us Lifting Us is all about, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people. So we're going to hopefully play a little music here today. And after We come back. My guest, Baba Akima. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradio.com. I'm your host, Brother Oshi. Be right back.
Shop owner, I want your business. What must I do to convince you that I'm here to service you? I live in the neighborhood and my ways are just as good. Why don't you come and support me the way you know you should? Can't count on you. What is a small businessman to do?
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives will review the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. And I'm your host, Brother Oshie. I didn't get a chance to do a good intro. Didn't do a chance to do libation. Had a little technical difficulty, but some of those things happen sometimes. And so you just gotta, you know, as a firefighter, you're always taught to, you know, improvise, overcome, and adapt. So that's what you gotta do. You don't panic. You just gotta make sure that you can still, you know, try to get a flow going, and that's what you do. But this is the fourth day of Kwanzaa, and of course, the greeting is Abarigani, and the response is Ujamaa. So I'm going to introduce my guest, and that is Baba Akima. Baba Akima is one of the, and well, in fact, I'm going to let him tell you all the things that Baba Akima is involved in. Baba Akima?
Greetings, brother.
Abarigani.
Ujamaa, Abarigani.
Ujamaa. Cooperative economics. How you doing this day, good brother?
Doing well.
Good, good. How long has ULU, us lifting us, been in existence, and how did it form, and who are some of the people who are involved? I know it formed here in Atlanta, correct?
Correct. In 2003, I'm not sure if you're hearing the echo, Brother Oshie, but there's a strong echo. But at any rate, in 2003, we established a nonprofit called the African Community Centers for Unity and Self-Determination. And that's a nonprofit under the nonprofit statutes here in Georgia. And that organization continues to exist and host a number of events in the city. One of the major events is an annual or yearly election of a unity council, and that unity council serves to give stability, direction for the African-centered community in metropolitan Atlanta. And in 2011, from the African Community Centers, there was a call that went out to the community to form a study group or a think tank around Ujamaa, or economics, or cooperative economics. And so several brothers and sisters responded to the call, and over a year, meeting every week face-to-face, ULU was born. And in 2013, the final version of ULU as a limited liability company was put in place. So technically, ULU as a legal entity was birthed in June of 2013. And it's important that brothers and sisters understand that ULU is a business. It's a business formation. Sometimes it feels like yet another social organization, but the it's a business with a purpose. It's a business with a conscience, business with a soul, and it's like you, Oshie, it's unapologetically African.
Ashe.
And yes, indeed. And so our mission is really kind of simple. It's to build the machinery of lasting economic empowerment. But the important thing is to build the machinery. A lot of times we have goals and aspirations, and we are vigorous and energetic in that. And sometimes we go years and years, and we look around, and it's hard to determine what structures, what institutions we've put in place, sustainable institutions. And so the greatest success of ULU at this point is to put this legal structure in place, and then having more than 400 people, globally to buy into it as members and owners, and to begin to actually put in place freestanding businesses. We'll have online businesses as well, but the major accomplishment, again, starting in 2013, is that we have put a structure, a legal entity in place that gives us the capacity to incrementally gain greater and greater control of the economic activity of our communities.
And that's definitely what we need to do. I mean, you know, you asked the question, should we control the economics in our community? And of course, anyone that you would ask that question to would be a resounding yes. But the question becomes, or the answer becomes, how do we achieve that?
And it's really simple. And to reduce it to its simplest term, I would ask brothers and sisters to think of their community and think of a good number of the businesses in the community being owned by the community. It could be 10 or 15 businesses, 50 businesses, any number of businesses. Because those businesses are owned by the collective, by the community, as a co-op, and the fact that it's known, the community begins to have a different appreciation of itself. And if, in fact, those businesses are successful, they're creating jobs, they're providing needed goods and services, they're contributing to the charities or the nonprofit sector in the community. And for people our age, OG, and people in the middle and young people to that live in that community to know of the work that they have done, but to also have a sense of knowing that when some of us have transitioned, we have put in place businesses and institutions that our children and our grandchildren will continue to benefit from. That community has a much bigger image of itself. And as I often say, is that one of the byproducts of what we do is dignity. It's no fun knowing for sure that you ain't running nothing. You know, I mean, the children know we ain't running nothing. The old heads know we ain't running nothing.
That's right.
And I just simply say, from a spiritual and psychological standpoint, that's not a healthy place to be.
No, it's not. When particularly here in Atlanta, which is ironic, because in Atlanta we have a good number of our people who have wherewithal. In fact, it has been said, Baba Kima, that this is the widest disparity of income between those of the brothers and sisters who have and those of us who have not. It is the widest. And because of that, and the ones that have don't want to share, so we don't have a supermarket that is our own here in Atlanta.
Yeah.
You know? And so when our children go to the stores, go to the stores in our community, the service stations, convenience, whatever, it's not us. We're not running them, you know? I mean, just in Milwaukee, I was just told that Brother Dave's Gas, that there's only two service stations in Milwaukee that are owned by American Africans, and that's Dave's Gas, and Dave is from Africa. He's from Cameroon, and Sister Diane over on 8th and Atkinson. Well, she's still hanging on, but Dave gave it up. Him and his son, they want to do it, and so now there's some Arabs up in there, so we have one gas station. But when I went to Kansas City some years ago, it may have changed since that time, Baba Akima, but I was talking to one of the brothers in Kansas City, Missouri, and he was saying they don't have one service station that is owned by us in Kansas City. But that's across the country. So what we're talking about here is being able to, when our children go into a business, it is owned by us collectively. It is owned by that community. And so that child knows that his parents have invested in that business, and there's a good possibility that he or she will grow up in that business, you see. But right now, all we do is spend money. We got money. All we do is spend money.
Big time.
Yeah. Well, we have a caller. Good morning, caller.
Okay, Brother Ocean to your guest, brother Jay from New York.
Right.
Listen, you know, this is a beautiful conversation, but we have to start at the point to where, as in all honesty, we have no communities, if truth be told. Because in order to have a community, you must be able to control and sustain yourselves economically, politically, socially, all of those things. Like you said, we can't feed ourselves. We can't clothe ourselves. You know, we are in a position, like myself, living in Harlem, to where as blacks may own maybe 5 to 10% of the businesses in this so-called black Mecca, as they would call it. That's not a community.
No, it's just a hood. It's not even a neighborhood. It's just a hood.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And this is all over the country.
Yes.
There's no place to where one could say that there is, and this is sad and it's heartbreaking when you think about it, that there is a functioning black community where they could sustain themselves in all facets without the Urugu having control of it. There's no place in this country.
No,
that's
it isn't.
Sick.
And you know, and I make mention of that, Brother Jay and Baba Akima, many times about the fact that when we had those communities, and they grew up based on segregation and the fact that the Caucasian did not want you to go anywhere near their stuff. And if you did, you got to go around the back and so forth. So we, you know, pulled our resources and did for ourselves, and we grew. And then the Caucasians became envious and jealous and used any excuse to vamp on our community in Rosewood, in Tulsa, Elaine, Arkansas,
yeah,
Allentown, Pennsylvania, to destroy them. But Joe Jay, this is the deal, to destroy them. And by doing so, putting into the minds of many of our people that we cannot come together and be a self-sustaining community. Because you're right, there is no place in America that can say, because in fact, the last one was the Haiti community in Carolina, Raleigh-Durham area. And of course, the model cities and the building of the expressway ruined that, where we have a community that is self-sustaining. The businesses that are there, theaters and school, everything is run by us. There is no place in America.
If you look at it, that was probably the last time in this country that we as African people were in a forward-bound collectiveness. Collective with one another, if you think about it. Because now we are just totally divided, trying to integrate into this Urugu system with all of the integration that has been going on since the 60s. And it still hasn't done anything for us. I mean, you could use the example of what just happened in Alabama. You had 97% of the population of blacks vote for this Urugu, and now here it is that the Urugu is all in office. The Urugu ain't giving them nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, that right there is a sickness. But you have these so-called leaders constantly pressuring black people to go out there and vote. But when you go out there and vote, you have no plan, no agenda, nor are you able to tell that Urugu what your wants and your desires and your demands are. How could you continuously do this at this time in our history? Something is wrong. The message that you, Brother Oshie, and your guest is putting out, it seems like on a certain level, it's going on deaf ears with this upper echelon Negro Pete. He's the one that's basically destroying us as a people to get closer to the Urugu. And the Yoruba has no love for us. He wants us all dead, if the truth be told. If you can't do nothing for the Yoruba, he has no use for you. And unfortunately, we do not realize that. So we live in this mirage, in this fantasy, that we're really doing something, but all we're doing in all truthfulness is just dying a slow and malicious death at the hands of the Yoruba.
That's deep, and brother. That's true.
That's sad, because if you think about it, in all truthfulness, like you just said a few minutes ago, Brother Oshi, the last of the Rosewoods, you know, Tulsa and all of that, was the last time when we were going in the direction of Forward Bound, because you know what we were doing? We were educating ourselves.
Yes.
We were feeding ourselves. Yes. We were closing ourselves. We were doing all the things necessary to survive. And the progression was that the child's life was better than the parent's life and the grandparent's life. Now that's no longer happening. The way that they're changing this system now, how do you have generations of children that are not going to be able to surpass their parents economically on the level that we did from the progression of the 40s, 50s, and the 60s? That's something that our economists, our psychologists, and sociologists don't even address or deal with, because they never look at it from a perspective of saving African people. It's always about the perspective of integrating into Yoruba's house, and the Yoruba don't want you. So listen, brother, keep up the good work. I'll be listening. And we got to figure out how in the years ahead we're going to be able to, number one, build communities and find it value that we see ourselves as African people and our strength, and wean ourselves off of the tip of this Yoruba, because that's a dying beast that's taking us along with him. So
Hotep, and a
beautiful, hopefully prosperous New Year's for all of us. And Brother Oshi, I didn't know you was an ex-fireman, man, because you know something? Whenever you talk about being a fireman, I always think about the hell that the Vulcan Society has gone through in New York City. And let me tell you something. It's a dangerous job, but it's the best job that one could have in New York City. And the Yoruba keep us out of there. They fight more harder to keep us out of the fire department than you could on any other job. Because right quick, I think firemen can work 24 hours straight in New York City and have 3 days off.
Right.
I mean, I know cats that have been firemen that went on and went to law school and everything. It's a hell of a job.
Yes, it is.
But, man, they don't want none of us on that job in New York City. And you know what the sad thing is? Every time, or most of the time, you get a Negro on that job, he's a meek and passive soul. And you should look at the sickness and the manner in which they act and behave around that Yoruba.
Yeah.
Oh, it's crazy, man, because I don't live too far from a fire station, and I see a couple of guys every now and then, you know, because they get together, they go in the supermarket.
Right.
I see them in the supermarket and stuff like that. And the way that Negro behaves, Lord, if they wanted to hang his ass, he would just go along with being him. Have a good day, brother.
All right, Jay.
Hotep,
dear brother. Thank you so much. In fact, I've talked about the New York City Fire Department a number of times and its racist practice. In fact, the 9/11 inside job exposed the New York racist fire department for what it is. The fact that they have over 11,000 firefighters, 11,000, and only about 300 of us. So, but that's another subject. But we're going to talk. We're talking with Brother Baba Akima, and we're talking about us lifting us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people, in the spirit of Ujamaa Cooperative Economics, or like we like to say, family-centered economics. And Brother Jay pointed out about the problems of realizing and making that happen. And as he was speaking, I kept thinking about all of the efforts that Kwanzaa presents for us to eliminate that, and what ULU is trying to do to eliminate that. What do you say, Baba Akima?
Yeah, I think Brother Jay really stressed some very critical, important points. And what I would say to Jay and to our listening audience is that I would think that there are probably no less than a million of us who feel the same way. Brothers and sisters of the same mind and spirit, but we're disconnected. We don't have a connecting thread from an economic perspective. And so I would say to Jay and to us in general, one of our greatest failures is that we do not put in place institutions or tools to do the heavy lifting for us. We think because we want it, we need it, we aspire to it or for it, that it is our will, that it can be done. The first thing you do is build a tool to get the job done. And this is a massive job. Yes. And so the tool and the institutions that we build have to be specific to the task at hand. And so much of what we've done has not been in the vein of building sustainable institutions. I would say, Brother Oshi, if we look at the energy, the time, and the money spent on hosting conferences to discuss the problem,
yeah,
if we had simply used that money, time, and energy in building institutions that on a consistent day-to-day basis, week-to-week basis, address the issue and put in place mechanisms that in a very tangible way address the problem, we'd be further ahead. You know, because we have analyzed the problem to the extent that, you know, I don't know that you can analyze it anymore.
But the
main thing I want to point out is that, Jay, there are probably no less than a million brothers and sisters of the same mind and spirit as you have. And it's valuable. But if we don't create the platform to merge that energy and then focus it on projects that begin to give us the ability to create and sustain communities. He's right in terms of his explanation about community. But I would ask Jay and ask others, what is the solution? We correctly analyze the contradictions and the problem. And so Us Lifting Us has spent considerable time to put together a process, a strategy, a business formation that gives us the good opportunity. As a matter of fact, I call it an exact method for building community. And but anyway, I'll stop there and thank Brother Jay for his wise comments.
Because I understand, excuse me, where a lot of our people are coming from, and you look at our situation instead of just where the majority of us, which is sad to say, continue to blindly go along to get along. So those of us who are looking at this, who have stepped outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed us in, and who have released the vice grip that Europeans have put on our minds. And not that we're challenging Caucasians, because there's really nothing we can do or say that will change their attitude and their mindset and their direction of what they're going to do. What we must do is we must change in our response to it, for we come together, pull our resources, and do for ourselves. to transform our community to someplace that is a true community, where we pull our monies, we invest with each other, we build businesses, we support those businesses, we employ our people. I ain't talking about somebody getting rich. We ain't talking about the capitalistic model of selfishness and greed and individualism, materialism, greed and violence. I ain't talking about that. We're talking about a concept where African people can come to American Africans and Africans around the world, because we do have members around the world, don't we?
Yes.
You know, and so that concept can be done anywhere. In fact, there are some models already being done. So it's not like something that we're just talking about, theorizing about. It has been done. You know, I know you mentioned the Mondragon model in Spain. There is a cooperative in Ohio. There might be even smaller cooperatives that we don't know of, you know. But the real bottom line is we need a mass campaign so we can pull these monies together and build businesses. And that's the bottom line. I know that I'm excited. Yesterday, of course, was Ujima, Collective Work and Responsibility. And so I was at the Ulu Cafe. I was at Cafe Ulu helping in the preparation. And a great shout out to Brother Ken. Brother Ken is doing an outstanding job. And Brother Richard was there yesterday as well. We were doing some taping in preparation for painting and discussing some of the other things that are going to be happening. And hopefully we'll be opening Cafe Ulu, the coffee and internet cafe, within the next month, I hope, you know, and then hopefully duplicating that in other cities, where we have a Cafe Ulu in Dallas and L.A. and Chicago, Milwaukee, wherever, because it can be done. We're establishing a model of pulling resources where it can be done.
Yeah, a lot of times brothers and sisters think that to get started, you have to have massive amounts of funding, and you don't. But even if we had to have massive amounts, we got it. We got it in our hands, and we don't have to go to Bank America or to you know, these other sources to fund our, I say fund our rise, but to create the institutions that we need. A lot of times, for instance, we in Ulu, we focus on $1,000 as a benchmark that each person should try to accumulate in order to buy a share or unit in Ulu. And just in terms of scale, 1,000 units in Ulu is $1 million. We're fast approaching a scenario where we can do that over and over and over again. And with shrewd business planning, attention to detail, especially in the accounting arena, not only can we establish the businesses, run them in such a way that they become profitable and successful, and the revenue from the business, some of which can go back into the pool to expand and build other businesses. So we're at the beginning stages of what is likely to be a multi-billion-dollar business enterprise. And we feel that the opposition, the real opposition, 90% of it is in the heads of black folk, is this notion of what we can't do. And for those of us who, as you mentioned a little earlier, those of us who have moved beyond that, and it doesn't take a whole lot of us to do it. So for those of us who are right-thinking, who are progressive, who are African-centered, if we do what we should do, then we will have clear examples for the rest of our people. And so we won't find ourselves only having rhetoric to issue. We can actually point to success after success after success, the job creation, the provisions of needed products, goods, and services to our people, and point to the rudimentary elements of building and sustaining a community. But I just encourage us to look at it from the position of a glass half full as opposed to a glass half empty. We are a resource-rich people, not only in terms of capital, but in terms of know-how, in terms of energy, in terms of every kind of equity or value you would want to label or measure. We are extremely rich. We simply have not made up our minds and with the clear intent. Well, there's a saying, Oshie, and it's kind of, it almost seems like a joke, but it has a lot of wisdom in it. It said that it's easier to give birth than to revive the dead.
Mm. That's deep, yeah.
And so what most of our efforts are about is reviving the dead.
Right, right.
We must leave that alone.
Yeah.
And then focus on giving birth.
To new ideas, to new ideas and new concepts, exactly.
There you go, there you go. Mm-hmm. And institutions.
And institutions.
See, the ideas and concepts, you can't really use them. You can you can use them to guide your hand in building. So we have to build tangible institutions that are a reflection of this new way of thinking and this new way of being. So we must give birth to our own reality.
I say.
And initially, it's just an idea, but it has to be calcified in institutions. See, the European, it doesn't matter how racist he may be, how supremacist he may be in his thinking, that ain't nothing. But the fact that he's actually built institutions reflective of that mindset, that's what makes him a force to deal with in the world.
Yeah.
Not only his economic systems, his universities, his economics, his foundations, all the institutions that support that mindset. So the African-centered community is very rich and very powerful in its concepts. But where are the institutions that
exactly
reflect that mindset?
Exactly.
And so that's the given birth.
Yeah.
And several years ago, Oshie, we did from the African Community Centers a quarterly assembly focused on African-centered education. And we were fortunate enough at that time to have 13 African-centered schools here in Atlanta. I'm not sure how many we have now, but we have a good many of them. So that's one effort, and most of them are fairly small. But projects like ULU and others can, as they are successful, support the institutions that are not for profit and help sustain them and bring them to where they need to be.
Ashe. We have another call, Baba. We're going to take this call. 602. Good afternoon, Brother Marcus.
Akima.
How you doing, Brother Marcus?
I'm great, brother. I'm great. Yes, and good morning to the elder. You know,
great,
brother. You know, I have studied your program, and I think it's a brilliant program. You know, 1,000 people putting up $1,000. You know, that's $1 million each pop. You know, and you know that is a perfect. You know, it's a no-brainer, really. It's really a no-brainer, you know what I'm saying? 1,000 people putting up $1,000 each unit, each group, it's $1 million. And you can take that $1 million and invest it and keep turning it over and over and over again.
Oh,
but
sure.
As you were saying previously, you know, the psychological, there are two main problems we have as a people. It's psychological and economical. But it's more psychological, see? Because that is the barrier that keeps us from moving ahead, is lack of confidence in ourselves, lack of self-worth. You know, somebody always telling us, oh, you can't do this, oh, you can't do that, you know, and standing in our way, telling us, you know, the Europeans, oh, you know, so we need to put him out of, you know, put him out of our business, put him aside, you know, and focus on us. And yes, next year, you know, I am definitely planning to be a part of Hulu, because yes, as I said, I think that is the solution for Black people. You know, if we don't get a grip, you know, on our economics, you know, we could forget it. Yeah. You know, because without you know, everybody is carting out the money out of our community. You know, everybody, they want to get rich. The first place they come and set up is the Black community.
That's right. That's right.
And then we go and support the foolishness. Yeah, we support the, you know, and these people don't contribute nothing back to our community. Everything, they cart our money out of our community, and they get their money out of their community. So they, you know, they're living grand, you know, and we, you know, and another thing too, I think we're going to have to put some pressure on the churches too. We're going to have to put more pressure and let them be more responsible, because they amass a lot of money too. But they take that money and they bank it with the European bank, with white folks, who use that money then to gentrify us, you know. So we, you know, we're going to have to put some of these church people, look, you're going to have to put that money, you know, invest it in a Black bank that contributes to our community, instead of taking it, you know, and supporting, you know, white folks and white institutions. So that's, you right, keep on doing what you're doing, good brothers. I appreciate it. And as I say, next year, I'll definitely be a part of Hulu, because I like what you're saying. Beautiful. And I'll hang up and continue listening. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Marcus. Appreciate you, dear right, brother. Peace to you.
I'd like to say to Marcus, becoming a member is just $50 a year. That's a voting member. And there are other benefits to be derived from membership. And then as a member, you have the opportunity to acquire equity in the company. And all the monies that you put into the company, other than the first $50, is always your money. I mean, it's there for a time, but after a span of time, you can actually withdraw or redeem your ownership certificate for the money that you put in it. But you also, while it's there, you qualify for profit sharing. So a lot of times people think that we're asking people to donate. We try and keep that word out of our vocabulary. It's a business. It's a for-profit business enterprise. And the goal is to be returning to our member owners a portion of the surplus profit. But you're right, 1,000 people with $1,000, we want to be in a position to do that all over and over again. I often, Oshie, use the example of the Million Man's March. What if Farrakhan and Willie Wilson and Ben Chavis and the other leaders put a challenge out to the brothers who came, that each of them had a year to scrape together $1,000 each? And let's say that they were successful in doing that. That's $1 billion. If just a million. The question, of course, is what do you do with the money? The Hulu model says that you do not give a dime to charity, and you do not spend or give a dime to fund Black-owned businesses. And when I say that, very often people saying, well, what are you going to use the money for? You use the money only to start and run businesses. Now, some of the businesses are acquisitions. Sometimes they're profitable businesses in our community where the owners, because of age or other circumstances, illness, and the fact that their children or grandchildren don't want to take over the business, but it's a valuable business in the community. It may have been there for a long time. So we're in a position to take over, to acquire existing businesses, but also to build new businesses. And so the money that we aggregate, we only use to open and run for-profit business enterprises that are structured as co-ops. And that all of us, the membership around the world, collectively own each business. However, the workers as a group manage the business. Of course, they'll have a leader. We may call that person a manager. But it's a group-run enterprise. Now, once the businesses become profitable, when they're successful, then we give to charity. And then some of the institutions that we develop are financial institutions, and then we lend to entrepreneurs and to business efforts in the community. But the money that we initially aggregate and then some of the money that stems from the successful businesses goes into a pool to build and run for-profit businesses, small initially, then some medium, and then some large ones. And then we begin to link up internationally with our brothers and sisters on the continent, our brothers and sisters in Europe, the Caribbean, and Central and South America. We can grow this enterprise to be, as I mentioned earlier, to become a multi-billion-dollar enterprise. But doubling back on the scenario that I'm, the image that I'm painting is that in 95 when we came together, if we raked and scraped together $1 billion, and if we didn't give it away to charity or give it away, well, you're not giving away when you lend it to entrepreneurs, but sometimes they don't succeed, so you lose money anyway. But if you use it to build and run and hold in place co-op businesses and then deal with charity and lending on the backside, then it's a formula for massive success.
And that's the vision, as it was explained to me by you and other members of ULU, that I embrace. Because I love the idea of us doing for ourselves. I love the idea of having a business that I invested in, but I may even work there. But I know I feel good about it because it is part mine. It's not like I go to some job I really don't care about. You know, I need money because I got bills to pay and car note, house note, whatever, you know, and the drudgery of that. No, this is a business that you can feel proud to be working at and proud to know that it exists, proud to know that it is providing goods and services for our community that are desperately needed, as opposed to what is happening now in the major cities across this country. Every major city, it's the same thing happening, Baba Kima, and you know.
Yeah.
In that community, we ain't running nothing. The Arabs, the Koreans, the Indians from East India, if you want to use that term, all of them have businesses in our community, and they do nothing, nothing for our community. They don't provide any work, because a lot of them say they don't want us working in there.
Yeah.
They don't provide any scholarships. They don't provide anything except for whatever it is that they're presenting. And a lot of times it's bad. Like you see a Muslim, Iranian or whatever, has a store, but he's selling pork. He's selling loose cigarettes. He's selling beer to underage people. He don't give a damn about our community and the people of our community, disrespecting our women. See, all of these things will be corrected if we embrace the concept of cooperative economics, of Ujamaa, or family-centered economics. If you embrace the concept of what ULU is talking about, it will be corrected.
I see. Okay.
And it doesn't take that. Just like they said, if everybody participates, if we can get, I mean, we have over, what, 50 million people in this country, allegedly. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about, you know, a fraction of that, brothers and sisters coming together of like-mindedness who are willing to trust one another, respect one another, willing to work with one another to pull those monies together and trust the leadership to invest that money to build businesses that we can be proud of and for us to be as participants or as workers or whatever to promote those businesses. We can do this, brothers and sisters. We can do this.
Yeah. And one of the things, when you talked about trust the leadership, the point that we always want to make, the leadership is elected. So the real leader is the membership. They simply select and elect persons to run the day-to-day operations or manage or oversee it. But leadership is elected democratically. And so there are no persons who are permanently in place to do anything. It's the will of the people.
And that's something, too, that must be understood, that it's not a dictatorship. It's not a small band or group that are doing. It is collectively us. It is us. That's why the title, Us Lifting Us, is so profound, because that's what needs to happen. You know, I often say that individualism is a European or Caucasian desire, but collectivism is an African imperative. It is a must.
Mm.
We are a collective people. That's who we are. And here in this country, when it espouses individualism, materialism, greed, and violence, and because of that, that's why you see all the mass contradictions in this society in terms of obesity, diabetes, asthma, all these serious health problems that we have, because the society don't give a damn about the health of the people. It's just about making money.
Yeah.
All they care is about making money, which is just their bottom line. They don't care about the injustices. They don't care about what happens within our community, all the decay and so forth. They just care about making money, and they make money in every facet, particularly off our misery. Look at the imprisoned industrial complex and where we are mass incarcerated in. And there are some for-profit prisons, which a lot of our people, some of our people have invested in. They have invested in private prisons making profits off our misery. But see, you don't have no conscience for that, because it ain't, you know, you are trained that you are an individual and you have every right to make as much money and exploit as many people as you want. That's the kind of system that we have here that allows these things to happen. And of course, off our misery, everybody gets paid. The judges, the attorneys, the people who work at the prison. I never forget when they talked about a private prison coming into Wisconsin with Corrections Corporation of America. And they got some land in I think it was Boscoville, someplace west of Milwaukee. Milwaukee's on the far east. Milwaukee's right on Lake Michigan. So all the far west going towards Iowa. They got the land. They built the prison, and they told the state of Wisconsin, you need this prison. You want this prison. Wisconsin said, we don't do business like that. But guess what? They did.
Mm-hmm.
And that prison was packed. And the people in that farming area who were losing jobs and going broke, they celebrated the fact that they have a prison in their community, because that means jobs for them. And once the prison was open, 70% of the people in the prison were us. From the southeastern portion of the state of Wisconsin, us, because prison overcrowding was so deep, they were sending prisoners to Oklahoma and to Texas, because Texas looked at this prison it looked at this prison building in an idealistic way for money. They built larger prisons because they knew that in this society, the way this is, a lot of people, you talk about the land of the free and the home of the brave, but America imprisons more people than any country on this planet. And they imprison more African people than any country on this planet. We're roughly, in our population, as you know, Baba Kima, has been declining for a number of reasons. Homosexuality, mass incarceration, not being with sisters, brothers not being with sisters, drug addiction, you name it. There's a number of factors. But even in that, the prison population is growing. And so there are some prisons that say to states, if you don't maintain a percentage, then we're going to charge the state for these empty spaces. That's deep. And that's how deep the prison situation is. But what we're saying here is that we are talking about building institutions for African people. I had the program, Brother Damani Aquil, and we were talking about reparations. And I mentioned the fact that my concept for reparations has been and will always will be. And I understand there are some brothers and sisters who have been financially disadvantaged for decades, for generations. I understand that. And I understand that they need a little something, something. But I think that reparations should be used to build institutions. Not that we get some money so we can go buy a car and stimulate the economy as a stimulus pack. No, we should pull that money to build institutions that are independent and that we can begin to affect change for African people, not just in this country, but globally. You know, that's how we have to think, Baba, as you know.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And I don't disagree with you, but I would probably, it seems that only two people get reparations, people who are on the brink of extinction and powerful people who, because of their power and influence, can wrestle away resources or reparations from the party that's injured them.
Right.
I don't see us at either end. That's not to say that reparations are not just, but what we do for ourselves is paramount.
That's right.
Because it's one thing to mount a reparations campaign and develop, again, campaigns, put money and effort behind it. And if we're not at the same time committing more energy to building our institutions, then there's a problem with that picture. Remember the brother that came on our show a couple of times now, maybe. I think it was a couple of times. The author of Sovereign Psyche.
Oh, yeah, Brother Aaron.
He's come on your show too, right?
Yes, he has.
Yeah. But he uses three terms that I think are important for us to really kind of digest. The first phrase or term is chattel slavery, and we pretty much know what that's about. Then the second term he uses is chattel freedom. And I pause there because I really want that to sink in. Chattel freedom. We're still chattel, but we have this notion that we're free.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the third term is authentic freedom. So what we're hopeful of is that some percentage of us come to the position of being authentically free, of being sovereign. And a sovereign is a mature, adult kind of thinking where you simply or we simply look at the environment, and our desire is to carve out the out of the environment what is needed to sustain, protect, to nurture our people. And it's not about asking, begging, pleading, prodding other elements in the community to address our needs. The mature African in the 21st century establishes the position that I will build my kingdom, I will sustain it, and that all that comes up against it and who seeks to injure or hinder it will be moved. And the when I said a little earlier, when I talked about giving birth, I use as an analogy sometimes, let's take a building. Let's say it's a school, 2 or 3 story building. And somehow we plant underneath that building an acorn. And somehow we supply nutrients and energy to that acorn such that it begins to grow as an oak tree. If that tree, that acorn, as a budding tree, continues to receive nutrients and energy, it will move that whole building.
That's right. That's right.
And it won't do it out of anger.
It's natural.
Do it out of anything other than the fact that it's creating space for itself.
That's right. It's a natural
thing. And everything else must move. And so when I talk about giving birth, I call for it from that perspective. And so sometimes, very often I would think, that we are moving and responding from the position of the chattel freedom position. Mm-hmm. In other words, we think we're free, but we're still shackled by the inhibitions, the fear, the uncertainty of our precarious position in the world, and that it's, you know, quite old, but we haven't come into the new mindset that ultimately I'm responsible for the condition. And I'm responsible for creating the institutions, the tools, the strategies, the processes that would make me master.
That's right.
And that would minimize all the controls that other people would want to have over me and over us.
I say. Because that's the mind.
I'm going to have to run, Oshi.
Okay, Baba. I appreciate you very much.
Yeah. And we've got Kwanzaa at my home on the 30th, so that's Saturday. So we're preparing for that and looking forward to members of the family joining us on Nia.
Right on. All right, dear brother. Ashe.
All right, peace.
Peace. We thank Baba Akima for his wise information. We're going to take a break. Come back for the break. We'll talk more about the Kwanzaa celebration, and of course, the importance of this day, which is Ujamaa, cooperative economics, or family-centered economics, as we like to say, for those of us who are in us lifting us. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Our call-in number is 215-490-9832. Please give us a call. We'll be right back.
Africa, to know all the reasons that we're spread over the diaspora. You know our culture keeps us connected to our motherland. To all our brothers and sisters, let us now extend our hand. Cause it's a way to teach the principles that we must learn to reap the wealth of every seed we sow. The Nguzo Saba gives us values and a way to show we're building a future we can harvest so the world will know.
We come from the time we make a mental list of all the things our freedom consists of. We share the purpose our people must unite for. Determine for ourselves what we choose to live or die for. We have the faith, the creative mind. It comes to us through our ancestral bloodline. Collective work, responsibility for our global economics and political destiny.
I want to say that I'm an African. I celebrate Kwanzaa because I'm an African.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And of course, you can give us a call here. Our calling number is 215-490-9832. The music you have been listening to, I've been playing, is Kwame Cobb and Shavinduka. Shavinduka is spelled Chavunduka. Sister Shavinduka, beautiful. The CD is called The Seven Principles. There's a few of the songs on the Seven Principles CDs I'm going to be continuing to play throughout the year because they're just some dynamite songs, beautifully done with a serious, true message. Also, too, Brother Bashir Mchawe last week, Friday, gave a book for brothers and sisters if you want to know more about the Kwanzaa and, of course, about African tradition. And it's by Keith Mayes, M-A-Y-E-S, Keith Mayes. And it's Kwanzaa and the Black Power and the Making of the American African Holiday Traditions. Kwanzaa and Black Power and the Making of the American African Holiday Tradition. So pick that up. We were talking with Baba Akima, and we appreciate Baba Akima with the Us Lifting Us organization, ULU, and we're excited about the Cafe ULU, which will be opened up here in Atlanta over on Sylvan Road, right off of Highway 161 near that area. And very excited about it. But a lot of us need to know about Us Lifting Us. You can go to their website, which is usliftingus.com, USLIFTINGUS.com. Or you can call 404-592-2780, 404-592-2780. They have a 10-point program, that 10-point appeal and plan for the new American African economy, the new black economy. And Us Lifting Us Development Cooperative, LLC, which is Limited Liability Corporation, they have a 10-point, and the first point is, has African people, has black people, I'm going to use the words they have here, because you know me, I'm say all the time, we ain't black, we African. That's for real. But as black people, we have full responsibility for the economic destiny of our community and nation. Number two, black people, black persons, and black institutions, especially the black church, should join together as members in a large-scale cooperatively owned business enterprise to pool our resources. Number three, the cooperatively owned black business enterprise is reflective of our unique culture and interests in the world. Number four, the governance and legal form of the cooperative accommodates democratic principles. One member, one vote, with elected leadership. And you heard Baba Kima mention that. Number five, only members of the cooperative and not the public. Only members of the cooperative and not the public have the opportunity to secure ownership units, equity in the business enterprise, with the potential to amass billions of dollars for community development. Number six, the cooperative focuses on opening and operating businesses in local communities that, number one, provide needed goods and services. Number two, create new jobs. Number three, stimulate additional businesses. And number four, yield a fair profit. Number seven, the cooperative is driven to duplicate and expand into hundreds and eventually thousands of businesses, all owned and controlled by the collective. Number eight, the net profits from overall cooperative success are used to, number one, reinvest. Number two, for the distribution of grants and endowments. And number three, direct returns or dividends to members, owners of the cooperative. Number nine, the large-scale cooperatively owned, group-owned business enterprise functions as a catalyst and a central element in building and sustaining the new black economy, one that gives power to our people. And number 10, Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative LLC serves as the aforementioned model. It is the model. A special note, these 10 points form the basis for economic empowerment. The security and welfare of our people starts with our determination to control the economy of our community and nation. Black people and black people alone hold the key to the gateway leading to their freedom. That is from the philosophy of independence and the opinions of Marcus Mosiah Garvey in 1923. Us and us alone, brothers and sisters. That's why we push and promote ULU on this program. They have a program every Thursday night where they talk about and encourage our people to pool our resources and come together and do for ourselves. They talk about the Mondragon model in Spain, how that little small community in Spain was being persecuted and so forth. Even because they're in Spain, but the Spanish. Because, you know, just like other places, there are groups of people that are looked down upon. They're discriminated against. They're ostracized. They're segregated. And they pull their resources together. And so now they're a multi-billion dollar providing goods and services and jobs for their people. The models are there, brothers and sisters. We just have to once again release the vice grip that the Caucasian has on our minds that prevents us step outside of the imposed boundaries that prevents us from coming together to share a clear vision for us and our future as African people. I hope that you are enjoying the Kwanzaa season. I hope you had a chance to go to some of the community events that have been happening, or just like Baba Akima said, they're having Kwanzaa at their house tomorrow. There's a Kwanzaa event happening across the city of Atlanta, I'm quite sure in your locale. I know the weather at this time of year can always be a little of an issue, but I was very proud to see, as I told Brother Claiborne Benson, who was my guest the other day, about what was happening on Tuesday, because I spoke to him on Wednesday, and to see how Milwaukee, even though it was extremely cold, the brothers and sisters in Milwaukee came out. As Brother Claiborne said, about 400. That's tremendous. Last night, that was about what Umar Johnson had, maybe a bit more, that he had at his presentation last night. You know? So I think that, you know, there is an element within our people that really still wants to grasp who we are. I don't think we're totally whitewashed, although many of us are. And I hate to use that word, many, but that's the fact. Because if it wasn't, the situation wouldn't be what it is right now. Because we're trained. That's why this program, that's why every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I come on this program with an express purpose to put something on our minds, to get us to think. Hopefully I bring people on this program with ideas and concepts and stuff that they're doing to help us understand that we don't have to go along to get along, scratch where we ain't itching, laugh when ain't nothing funny. We can be men and women of integrity. We can control the dynamics, not just the economy, but the dynamics that are happening within our communities across this country and literally around the world. So this is, you know, I mentioned earlier about this being upcoming of a new year. And I know that the calendar has been manipulated. That's a fact. And I know that we're talking about this is a new year coming up. And I mentioned earlier that it's kind of deep that you would say it's a new year when everything is in the Northern Hemisphere is cold and dying and or dead. You know, that a new year should bring forth new something new within nature, something new within the society, within the world, something new. That's why I believe that really the new year should be in springtime, as opposed to January in the dead of winter. It should be springtime, where it's bringing forth new plants and animals coming out of hibernation, giving birth around that time. You know, that's what should happen. But, of course, Europeans control and dominate everything. And they dictate, and they dictate in such a fierce way at times that it's really criminal. But I don't give a damn. We must do what we must do for ourselves. In spite of all the things that have happened, we have to. If we're going to be a people on this planet who are self-determining, who can control our resources, and so we got to do it. We have to do it. In fact, we can use the Kwanzaa principles, because that's why I keep saying to you, these Kwanzaa principles must be instilled in our everyday lives. That's why I'm adamant about the Kwanzaa celebration. That is not just something that happens between December 26th and January 1st. It is something that we should incorporate into our everyday lives because of how important it is. We have a caller. Good afternoon, caller, 804.
Greetings, brother. So glad you all doing a powerful show today, and you're just going deep in so many areas, including talking about nature. I'm just so proud to hear a brother even incorporating nature into this little brief discussion about the new year, because there's too many people not even in touch with to even say what you said, nature, because it's so real.
Yeah.
Because the ancient ones, and if we look it up, the ancient ones did celebrate a new year when it had to have some nature and some universal significance.
Yeah.
And so in this part of the planet, it's around March or later when life sprang forth again.
That's right.
So listen to those words, life sprang forth.
That's
something new.
Something new.
But a few days from now, you and I both know, we go outside and look outside today, and a couple of days from now, go outside and look outside and feel it and see if you feel or see anything new. Look up in the sky.
No, brother.
But when life sprang forth again, yes, there is something new. The trees are budding, the flowers are daffodils, the birds start singing, they're building the nest, getting ready to lay eggs. Life sprang forth again.
Right on.
And you all touched on so many powerful things, and certainly, especially about us lifting us and this cooperative model and how it just makes good sense for the mind and good sense when it comes to our black dollars.
I say. Well, thank you, my brother. Thank you for those words. I appreciate it. And continue to listen and continue to call.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Peace to you. Thank you, brother. That was beautiful. Because he's right. But here's how we can incorporate the seven principles into our daily lives and transform ourselves. The number 13. The number 13, is it a good or bad number? I know in this society, Friday the 13th. No 13th floor on some hotels. No 13th row in some airlines. The number 13 is a bad number, evil number. Well, it's not. The number 13 is the number of transformation. How many colonies did these Caucasians establish? 13, right? Why not 12? Why not 10? Why not 15? Because they understood and they knew that the number 13 is the number of transformation. 12 completes the cycle and 13 begins anew. So how can we put this number 13 into our everyday lives and have it transform us as a people? The number 13, here's the other examples of the power of the number 13. How many disciples did Jesus have? 12 plus Jesus, 13. How many jurors on a trial? 12 plus the judge, 13. How many signs in the zodiac? 12 plus the sun, 13. So you see what I'm saying? The number 13 is not no scary, spooky number. The number 13 is the number and the power of transformation. So here's how we can put the number 13 into our daily lives and transform our community. First, we're going to use the seven principles of Kwanzaa, Umoja, unity, Kujichagulia, self-determination, Ujima, collective work and responsibility, Ujamaa, cooperative economics, Nia, purpose, Kumbh, creativity, and Imani, faith. Add to the seven, the five C's, the five C's. And the first C is consciousness. Consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are. Who you are culturally, who you are historically, consciousness. I love the conscious community. And I know there's been some stuff said about us in the conscious community, because out of the conscious community comes Ulu. Baba Akima is a brother who, for many years, espoused the importance of consciousness. Consciousness. The second C is once you got consciousness, you have courage. You feel good about yourself, not cockiness. You feel good. You have courage. You stand proud. You stand tall. You stand proud and tall with your man. You stand proud and tall with your woman. You stand proud and tall with your children and your elders. And you give honor and respect to your ancestors. Courage. The third C, confidence. Confidence. Not cockiness, not ego. Not you ain't tripping, but you have a confidence. You know you can pass the test. You know you can get the job. You know you can get the promotion because you have confidence. The fourth C, conscience, knowing what is morally right and wrong, and standing on what is right, standing on principle, standing on integrity, conscience, doing the right thing when no one is looking, conscience. And the fourth C, conviction. You have an idea of what you want to do. You have a conviction. And you will not stop until you reach that goal. No matter what roadblock, detour, or pitfalls are laid in your path, you overcome them. You persevere because you have conviction. So now, you have the seven principles, and you have the five C's. You have unity, self-determination, collective work responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, faith, and you add it, consciousness, courage, confidence, conscience, and conviction. How much is 7 plus 5? 12 plus you? 13. That's how we can change this, brothers and sisters, by putting the number 13 into our daily lives. We end this program like we end all our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. Brothers and sisters, this program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Shemhotep means go in peace, and Sisante Sana means thank you. Thank you, my brothers and sisters. Have a blessed weekend. See you on Monday.